From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made around the Thanksgiving dinner table, which may look different this year. As the leaves change and we head closer to Halloween, conversations about, yes, Halloween, also Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's Eve, they're becoming topics of conversation in a lot of families, and sometimes strong disagreement. This can be tough. Coronavirus cases are spiking in different parts of the country. And according to NPR, Dr. Anthony Fauci has warned that Thanksgiving gatherings may accelerate the spread of the virus even more. The CDC recently ranked holiday gatherings by level of risk. When it comes to Thanksgiving, a small dinner with only people who live in your household is considered low risk. Small outdoor dinners with local friends and family considered moderate risk. And large indoor gatherings with people from outside of your household are considered higher risk. On Monday, The Atlantic Monthly published a piece titled, How to Tell if Socializing Indoors is Safe. Writer Olga Kazan stated that many Americans have no idea whether hanging out with people inside is risky or how risky. And that, she said, is a big problem. So what do you plan to do for Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's Eve this year? Our goal this hour is not to create a roadmap. There's still too much that's unknown. But we want to create a space for conversation. Talk about not only what people are planning to do or maybe what they should do, what they're thinking about doing, but just how to have the conversations at all, especially with friends and family who might be taking a different approach to the holidays than you are. Should you wear masks or social distance? Should high-risk people not attend gatherings? Should gatherings not be held at all? Much of this might be too complicated for us to navigate on our own, so we're joined by medical experts who can answer questions, help us understand what we know about the virus and its spread now, what the big questions might be when the holidays arrive, what the consequences might be if we experience a collective national letdown. And listeners, we do want to open it up to you this hour. Please email us, connections@wxxi.org. Are you changing your holiday plans? Are you going to do things differently? Have you had conversations? Is it hard to have those conversations? Do you have some family members who are just sort of dug in and don't want to change? I've been there. This is really, really difficult. And no one's going to be shamed in this hour, no matter where you are. No shaming. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994 if you're in Rochester. I'd like to welcome our guests now. Dr. Elizabeth Murray is an assistant professor of pediatrics and a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Murray, welcome back to the program.
Hi, hello.
Also, hello to Dr. Brenda Ticini, an assistant professor of infectious diseases and a member of the Center for Community Health and Prevention's Emerging Infections Programs team at URMC. Dr. Ticini, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
And Jennifer Gutowski is a registered nurse and associate director of infection prevention at Rochester Regional Health. Jennifer, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Let me ask all three of you, how difficult are these conversations, and have you been in the middle of any tough conversations already yourselves? Dr. Murray?
They have potential to be incredibly difficult, right? Because family events sometimes have some challenges regardless of the pandemic, and so it can be tough. So far, so good for my family, but I certainly have friends and know other people that have really hit some challenges on this topic. So it requires a lot of discussion, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Dr. Ticini, what do you think?
I agree with that. Holidays are often considered stressful times for families to begin with, and these are very personal risk-benefit decisions that have to be made at an individual level and also at the family unit level and at a whole society level. So it's important to have these kinds of conversations.
Jennifer, what do you think?
Yeah, these are hard conversations. And I know personally we've struggled to having family that don't live in the area and are further away. So it's difficult for them to visit now that we're approaching a time of the year where we can't be outside and have a picnic in a park where we're a little further away. So, it's a challenge, especially with family that really love to be social and cook big meals. It can be disappointing.
We're going to talk about different holidays and maybe different approaches coming up here. But let me just start with an email I got from a listener that kind of offers some of the fed up perspective So this is what Charles writes. Charles says, sorry, but I'm done with the we are in a pandemic excuse, and I certainly will not allow that to dictate any of my holiday plans. We were in a pandemic on Easter Sunday, and I followed the rules, while a bunch of people in the Rochester area didn't, a trend which has repeated itself quite often while, quote, we're in a pandemic. Enforce one standard or don't enforce it at all. That's from Charles. I actually don't really know. I wish I had a better understanding of Charles' last point there about on Easter Sunday he followed the rules and some other people didn't. I mean, no one's going to enforce this in that way, Charles. It's just a question of what we think is the right thing. So, I mean, I don't think you're going to see police going into house parties on Thanksgiving, but let's start with the fact that he's fed up and he's not going to let the pandemic dictate any more holiday plans. He already did it on Easter. He's not doing it again. Dr. Murray, let's start with you. What would you say to someone like Charles?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm fed up with life being different too, but it's going to get a lot worse if we don't play by some of these rules. Unfortunately, we have been incredibly successful here, and it's because of a tremendous amount of sacrifice and hard work by all of our citizens and our whole entire community. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. We've already started to see a little bit of increases in clusters of cases. And I think we have every reason to believe, unfortunately, that those, unless we're really careful, those clusters are going to continue to happen because we can't necessarily be outside as much. And all of those kind of normal winter things are going to start coming our way. So, you know, I don't think it's a either or. I hear a lot of kind of false dichotomies when it comes to dealing with the pandemic, that we're going to sacrifice this over this, or you know, something always has to lose. And to a certain extent, that's the case. But I think there's plenty of things that we can do to balance our risk and mitigate our risk. It doesn't have to be a complete all or nothing. And I think that's where we have to really focus, is what can we do to mitigate risk so we can still have some pleasure in our daily lives and you know, get back out and interact with people. But, you know, there's always going to be a cost and benefit, and we have to accept some trade-offs.
And what would you say, Dr. Murray, when Charles says, look, I followed the rules on Easter, but other people didn't, and I'm sick of that?
I think that that just doesn't really seem like the appropriate, mature response that I would expect from people. I mean, that's how everything is, right? There's always going to be people that are, you know, to the extreme, going to break the laws when we're choosing to follow the rules. There's going to be people who aren't going to pay their taxes, but we're going to do the right thing. And I think everybody in a cooperative society, when given the choice, let's choose the best. Let's be our best. Let's be the responsible person. Let's be the role model for our children. And let's do what we know is the safest choice to keep our community healthy and going back towards thriving and striving. If we only did what other people did, I mean, I'm kind of flashing back to that conversation of, you know, parents and teenagers. You know, if all your friends were going to jump off a bridge, you're going to do it. You know, it's we all need to make our own decisions, and we have to make peace with our own decisions. But unfortunately, we can't control other people's behavior. So let's do what we know to be right and hope that others follow our lead.
Yeah. Dr. Tassini, what would you say not only to Charles, but I'm thinking about, I mean, I can think of family that I have in other states who have already, they've put down a marker. They said, we're doing Christmas. Damn it, we're doing it. It's too important. It's too important. This family's too important. We're doing it. You know, Charles sort of feels the same way, that look, it's gone on long enough. We're doing this. What would you say to folks who have that mindset, Dr. Tassini?
Yeah, I would say that we're all exhausted to different levels with constantly having the weight of this in our lives. But I would say to try and flip it into an opportunity to do something new and different. Dr. Murray was saying, it doesn't have to be we're not going to observe this holiday at all, versus we are going to gather our family who is spread around the country and has different levels of behaviors and precautions that they've been taking. And we have, you know, many people in our family who could get quite sick if they were to get COVID, that are vulnerable and at high risk of having severe disease, that we're just going to gather all these people together and, you know, stay in the same house for several days and not wear masks and stay indoors and not distance ourselves. You know, it doesn't have to be two extremes, that you can find something new and different to do. There are lots of really, I think, creative opportunities here to have virtual holidays and celebrations where you will send or drop off supplies to all make the same meals together and connect that way, particularly if your family or the people that you typically celebrate with are far away. You can do other things that still involve staying outdoors for part of it. You know, have dessert together outside over a bonfire where each household is a little separate, or go for walks together after you've eaten individually. So I think with some time and planning, you can still have that sense of community and celebration or observation of the holiday, but not put yourself or vulnerable family members at unnecessary risk.
Jennifer, what would you say?
Yeah, I think those are both great responses. I absolutely agree that this is, it's not a black and white answer to any of these questions, and there's going to be a continuum of precaution, and where you fall on that continuum is a personal decision. I know that personally I would struggle more with my own morals if I knew I was putting someone within my family at risk for severe illness, and as stated, we don't know who's going to become severely ill. You might be the lucky one who is mostly asymptomatic, but you could also be the unlucky person, and we've seen a number of them in the intensive care unit on ventilators. So unfortunately, I think we've seen news stories that people took the gamble and it ended badly for some of their family members. So I think in that perspective, I try to recognize that as much as I want to have the same old dinner we have every year with all of our friends and family from near and far, it might be the year to do something different. I know Easter felt very lonely. I think we really were in the midst of everything being shut down for Easter. But now that we know more about this virus, maybe we can take a step back and really look at how it's spread. I think CDC put out some great guidance. And we can say, well, maybe this is the year we have a small dinner with just our immediate family, and we relish in that time of closeness with our family, where we do love all our aunts and uncles, but this year it's going to be a little smaller, and we'll Skype them for dessert, or just include maybe some of our close neighbors. And I've seen a lot of creativity. I know someone I work with is retrofitting their three seasons room with some heaters and able to get some better ventilation. So I know that we can kind of band together with some creative options here.
Well, let's talk about that to Jennifer's point. Let me read a little bit from listeners and from The Atlantic first. This is from Olga Kazan's piece in The Atlantic earlier this week. Quote, no indoor gathering will be perfectly safe. Although many states have allowed indoor public settings such as gyms and restaurants to reopen, at least in some capacity, experts don't recommend spending a lot of time indoors with others, especially in situations where masking is impossible. The odds of catching the coronavirus are about 20 times higher indoors, and private indoor gatherings have been linked to several coronavirus outbreaks. In June, a surprise birthday party in Texas resulted in 18 coronavirus cases and one death. In July, a house party in Michigan led to 43 cases, and a family gathering in North Carolina led to 40 cases because the attendees went about their daily lives before they started showing any symptoms. In some places, in-home gatherings are now responsible for the majority of new coronavirus cases. A recent Center for Disease Control and Prevention report showed how a chain of family gatherings in Chicago led to three deaths, end quote. I don't say this to scare people. I don't. But Jennifer, when you talk about, you know, seeing someone on a ventilator in the ICU, have you heard of people saying, look, we had a small family gathering. I thought it would be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. There's those anecdotal situations that have certainly been highlighted in the news where it seems harmless, but then you don't realize that somebody, due to genetics and underlying medical conditions, may be really at risk for some severe illness from this virus. And I personally just think that in the back of my head when I think, well, I'm really just tired of isolating and let's see if we can have everybody over for a get-together. Well, you don't know all of your family's medical conditions, or you might have a pretty good idea, but you still won't have that magic ball to know exactly what would happen if one person comes with potentially asymptomatic coronavirus and it spreads within your gathering. I know that I saw in the news a number of individuals who felt a lot of guilt when they were the hosts for some of these gatherings. And so knowing how the virus spreads, the CDC has put out some additional guidance that over time, with rooms that are poorly ventilated, COVID aerosols can start to build up. And so the ventilation in enclosed spaces are really some of the riskiest environments. So in my own personal risk analysis, I would prefer to be in an outdoors space or somewhere with increased ventilation.
Before I let you go, because your time is limited, Jennifer, two quick points here. If you have a family member who says to you, oh, come on, you know, there's going to be only a dozen of us. We're going to be inside. It's going to be snowing. Just say yes. Are you comfortable now saying no?
Yeah, I feel I have to say no, and I can use my position as a crutch. I can say, listen, I'm the Associate Director for Infection Prevention. If I get COVID, this looks terrible, and I have to set the example. So I know not everyone has that crutch to say I'm involved in infection prevention, but I think we can all stick up and for ourselves and for our health and say it's not just about me, it's about you, and it's about everyone that we would have together. Unfortunately, if we can't get together because it's snowing on Thanksgiving, maybe the weather would be nice the following weekend and we could float another outdoor get-together on a later date. So I know it's strong to have it's very hard to have these conversations and be strong and to your beliefs. And I think there's a lot of insecurity, too, because mm-hmm. for the most part, we don't have a lot of COVID in Monroe County right now. We're doing really well. And I think if we haven't seen COVID personally, we might not be very afraid because we've not seen what it's done. I know I saw the height of COVID where we did have a significant number of hospitalized patients, and it was a very scary time. But personally, I have not had family or friends who've been ill with coronavirus. So it might, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's somewhat safe right now with the low numbers, but we have been seeing an uptick in community spread, and so it unfortunately can be lurking.
Last question for you, Jennifer, and I'll ask your colleagues this as well. It's on testing. We've got listeners asking, can I just get tested before I go see my family for the holidays? Can we make sure we all get tested right before we all get together? And will there be maybe even faster testing? We keep hearing about rapid testing or rapid results, antigen testing. Is testing an option to get families together this holiday season, Jennifer?
That is a great question, and one that we continue to discuss here at the hospital. We know that there's different sensitivities for different tests, meaning the test likelihood of actually detecting the coronavirus if you truly have it. So there's tests that can be very fast, but they may not detect your coronavirus. So we hesitate to recommend rapid testing, and for the most part, the testing that we rely on at the hospital is a PCR test, which is not a test that can be turned around in 15 minutes. It typically takes a bit longer, but there are different varying sensitivities to these tests. And one of the big things that we try to remind everyone here is, unfortunately, once you are exposed to COVID, you have to wait that full 14 days to see if you will develop illness. And just because you have a negative test result the next day or even 3 days later does not mean that that you won't get sick within that rest of that 14 days. So we have seen people who have come in from traveling and they were tested when they got back to New York and they were negative, but then later down the road within that 14-day post-exposure period, they did develop illness and were positive at that point. So unfortunately, a negative test is a big misnomer that a lot of people think they're good to go. I'll just get a negative test. Yes, it helps us feel more confident that you're negative, but there is a significant number of people who would still, a significant enough number of people who may still be infected with COVID, even despite a negative test, that we can't solely rely on that option.
Jennifer Gutowski is Associate Director of Infection Prevention at Rochester Regional Health. Thanks for the time today. Good luck over these coming months. Thanks for the work you're doing for this community.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
All right, let me ask Dr. Tessini. Let's talk about testing. Your family says, just get a test. Let's do a test. Generally, tell me if I'm going in the right direction with this, Dr. Tessini. My view is a test is better than no testing, but there is a potential of a false sense of security, especially given the fact that at least with the PCR testing, the nasal pharyngeal. Thank you, producer Megan Mack. That one, if I'm getting this correct, Dr. Tessini, if let's say you've been exposed to the coronavirus and then you get tested, the 3 days prior to that test, there's sort of like an increasing sensitivity the farther away you go. So if you pick it up today and get tested tomorrow, you might not get a positive test. So the bottom line is, the way I view testing is it's better than nothing, but shouldn't be a full assurance, and isn't sort of a perfect pass to party with family. How do you see it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. So it can be one of several tools or things that you use when considering is this a lower risk or higher risk situation to get together with specific people, but the test is really just tells you at that point in time from that sample taken using whatever test method is used. And Jennifer did a great job of just describing some of the differences between them and that not all tests are created equal. So it says in that sample, using that method, it could not detect whatever level of coronavirus that test can detect at that point in time. It doesn't tell you that, in the next few days that there won't be virus there. So if you think about someone, the situation where you were exposed to or around someone who had coronavirus, if you got infected at that time, it does take a few days. We think at least 3 days to develop enough virus to be able to detect it, even with our best, most sensitive method, which is the PCR of the nasopharyngeal sample that you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. And as Jennifer pointed out, most of the tests that are available in a more rapid turnaround format don't detect as the virus as well as that does. So if you're using those, then it's even a lower likelihood that it would be able to detect the virus. So you're correct that it is not a kind of get out of quarantine or get out of isolation free card. You still could come down with the virus. And I think a very public example is the White House. Most recently, there's a lot of rapid testing that was going on there among staff members. Yet clearly, a large number of people who work there are positive now for the virus.
And Dr. Tessini, what about a situation where, again, I hate to sort of play the hypotheticals, but this is what people are asking. I guess the problem is when people think, well, then what I'll do is I'll get all my food for Thanksgiving a week before, and I'll isolate for a few days, then I'll get tested, and then I'll isolate for a few more days, and then on Thanksgiving, as long as the test is negative, then we can get together, which is probably better than nothing. But that means that you don't go out to the grocery store, you don't go to the gas station. It's like, it's very hard to isolate. It's hard to really be fully sealed off from society, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, I think people who have had, who have been under what we would call quarantine or isolation measures from the health department can probably speak to this best that it's really staying at your home and not interacting with other people. And it really should be for those 2 full weeks because it takes that long for the virus to potentially show itself.
I will also wonder if testing is going to get sort of overloaded, given that New York State is offering it free. And I've many times on this program said how wonderful a job they're doing at MCC, just as an example. I mean, it's really well run. It's so easy to set up a test. In, out, you get your – last time I got tested last week, I got results in 24 hours. Just piece of cake. But I do wonder if we're going to see a crunch on available testing. Do you expect that?
I think that we're all trying to prepare community-wide, and you're right, between the state and local health departments and our hospital systems and laboratories and private practices, we've really done an amazing job about making testing available in our community. But we need to continue to do that, and it has been a tremendous amount of work for all the people involved to do that, to have tests available for people who really need it at that time, and to be able to turn those results around quickly. Like you had mentioned, that 24 hours, it means that all has to get done pretty locally. And that's one thing that could change if we see more people needing tests. Some of it may not all be able to get done locally, and it could slow down the turnaround times, which makes the results less usable.
Sure.
You know, we want people to know as soon as possible if they're positive. So I think as things are opening up with schools and more people going back to workplaces, it's great to see, but it does mean that we'll probably need to be testing more often.
Dr. Murray, anything you want to add on testing? I mean, do you view that as a possibility for your family?
No, because I want to leave my house. And so I think it's just, yeah. My kind of general mantra is that in an asymptomatic person, a negative test should never change your behavior with regards to the precautions that we know help, masking and physical distancing and good hand washing. And it's so tempting to excuse it away and make you feel better about a negative test. But the reality is, if you are asymptomatic and have a negative test, that means that you have a negative test today. And that's about all you can say about it. I think, too, we have to remember with winter coming, you know, all the other winter viruses are coming. And maybe they'll be less because of the precautions we've taken, and maybe they won't. I mean, I know my last shift in the ED, we definitely were starting to see the kids who were wheezing and having these kind of other respiratory illnesses. So with regards to testing, you know, there's going to be more people we're going to need to test because we're not going to be able to know by looking at them. Is it flu? Is it COVID? Is it enterovirus or any of the other kind of germs, RSV, the other germs that are going to start to come around this time of year? So there is certainly going to be, I think, an increased need for testing, just because I think we're going to see a lot of more symptomatic people with, hopefully, it's just the other regular germs, not necessarily hopefully more people symptomatic truly infected with COVID.
Well, let me read an email from a woman named Donna who says, I am honestly too scared to have this conversation with my mother. She's 81. And the isolation on her has been very difficult. She looks forward to annual traditions more than anything. And I fear telling her that we need to pare down our celebrations will be the final straw and make the winter even more difficult. We are usually three generations that gather together. The older generation are all retired and good about staying away from others. Within the two younger generations, we have family members who are working in school or working from home, so a variety of exposure risk. I think we all know we shouldn't take the risk and think somehow we're different and that we can't get infected. I need some creative ideas on how to celebrate without inside gathering, and I'm scared to tell my mom. So, Donna, I'm with you, and I'm thinking about my mom. Donna, I've talked about my mother on the program. She's around that age. My mother had pneumonia last October, November, and January, as in she was in the hospital three times with pneumonia, and then we get a respiratory pandemic. So I'm worried about her all the time, and this is a very, very hard conversation to have. Fortunately for me, Donna, my mom and my stepfather, who's 88, they always do their own little turkey together for Thanksgiving, just the two of them, and it's the cutest little tradition, and it makes me so relieved this year that that's always been their tradition. But Christmas is big time with them, and I'm with you there. This is so hard to talk about. Dr. Murray and Dr. Ticini, let's do two things. Let's talk a little bit about how we can show empathy, because especially for people like Donna, and I think about my mother and people like that, they're already feeling isolated. It's really hard, and I feel that. How do you have that conversation with empathy? And then what are some creative ideas? We've already heard some creative ideas, but maybe let's keep it going. Dr. Murray, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think I agree. My heart goes out. I mean, that is so hard. And I think first and foremost, you got to call it out for what it is and just say, yeah, we are grieving as a family because this is hard for us and this is not what we want. But we want you with us as long as possible, mom or grandmother or whatever the family member may be. And so we need to do some things to help keep you safe. And, you know, for that woman's family, maybe the happy medium is the generations that are able to isolate leading up to the holidays and really be very, very cautious can gather. And then the younger ones who have to enter into the world frequently or choose to enter in the world frequently, maybe they join remotely. So you have kind of a mix going on. You know, technology has really been on our side with regards to being able to socially gather, if not physically gather in the same space. But, you know, we have to treat all of this as a grieving process, right? Our expectations of this year have not been met. And it is a loss, and it is a loss of a variety of different ways. It's a loss of family interactions and social interactions. For some families, it's a loss of jobs and other financial concerns and just a complete disruption. And so it's a huge grieving process. And I think we need to allow ourselves to grieve and mourn the loss of what we had hoped our time this year was going to be and what we hoped the next few months were going to be. And the fact that we're just not necessarily there yet to completely normalize our experience is, again, it's another loss.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Dr. Ticini?
Yeah, I completely agree that acknowledging it goes a long way. And that, yeah, I'm in a similar situation with my mother as well. And we've had these conversations, and acknowledging it, it certainly does help, and finding some substitutes that give you a little bit of the pickup back, like doing something outside together, or identifying, you know, I don't know if other family members of that generation or the second generation, as Dr. Murray stated, if they have all been isolating and following all of the recommended guidance so far, if there is a way to still get those people together, or if there have been other people that your mother has gotten together with already, you know, keeping your circle small and consistent throughout the holidays will go a long way towards keeping the risk down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, staying with the same people that they already have been seeing, if they have, or if there are, you know, one or two children of the family that have already been going over there, or that, you know, have been able to really adhere to all of the practices recommended, the mask wearing, distancing. And in general, some other ideas for how to make any gathering as low risk as possible would be to have, again, outside, or as someone had mentioned, you know, on a three-season room with a space heater, something like that, something where there is a lot of increased air circulation, and keeping separate tables that are clearly more than 6 feet apart for separate families. So any time where people would have to take off a mask to eat, they're still at least keeping that physical distance, and there's good ventilation in the space. Another thing that really should change in any group gatherings, particularly as we think about the Thanksgiving table, that just having dishes out where everyone's grabbing the same shared utensils and passing them around the table, that really shouldn't be a part of group gatherings this Thanksgiving. You know, individual portions, or having like a single person serving out the food rather than family style on the table. Lots of hand sanitizer and hand washing. So some of these things can help lower some of the risks.
I think that's really good advice, Dr. Ticini. And for listeners who have maybe expanded their bubble a little bit, or I think one of the most important things we're hearing from Dr. Ticini is be consistent. Whoever you're seeing, you know, just try to be consistent, be really diligent. If you're going to gather, try to have as much open air flow as possible. Outdoors, if we could tough it out, space heaters, yes. You know, be as smart as you can about that. I think we can tough out some more outdoors than we think here. Here's CJ. CJ says, Evan, I'm heartbroken about Halloween. We're Zooming Thanksgiving with each group in their own bubble. We did buy 2 deck heaters for shorter outdoor gatherings. Christmas is harder because we have a 50-plus year tradition of large 20-plus people brunch. My husband and I recently started planning to deliver brunch treats on Christmas Eve to be heated at each home with a white elephant for each to participate in a Zoom Yankee gift exchange. But I'm welcoming other ideas. Thank you, CJ. That's very interesting. I like that idea. A gift exchange via Zoom, if you do that. Try to do it digitally if you can. Again, outdoors is good. I agree that indoor big brunch is tough. Yeah, maybe not. But the deck heaters, I think there's been a run on deck heaters. I needed to pick up mine earlier. I'm scared I won't find one. But those are some ideas from CJ. Listeners, if you've got more, kick them my way via email. I see more coming in here. Connections@WXXI.org. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Let's take our only break, and then CJ said I'm heartbroken about Halloween. That didn't elaborate, but I do want to ask Dr. Murray and Dr. Ticini what we can expect, at least with the closest holiday to us, that's Halloween, what we should expect for our kids. Maybe there's a difference between trick-or-treating and Halloween parties, so we'll talk about that. And we'll continue to work through creative ideas, if you've got them, as we talk the holidays with Dr. Elizabeth Murray, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics and a Pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital, and Dr. Brenda Ticini, Assistant Professor of Infectious Diseases and member of the Center for Community Health and Prevention's Emerging Infections Program Team at the University of Rochester Medical Center. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we talk with candidates for New York State Supreme Court. There are 7 candidates vying for 4 seats. We talk to the first group running for those seats on Monday, then the second group on Wednesday. Your chance to hear them. People are often confused about what judge positions even are. We'll talk about it. In our second hour on Monday, Dr. Ethan Welch is a retired local surgeon who's written a new book called Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the U.S. We talk to him. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let's talk a little bit before I get to Kristen and Aranda Quaid on the phone. Let me hit CJ's point via email that she said, I'm heartbroken about Halloween. But Dr. Elizabeth Murray is a pediatrician. Trick-or-treating is probably going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen pretty normally-ish. I mean, kids are wearing masks when they're dressed up to begin with. What do we say about Halloween?
Yeah, I'm taking Halloween as a win. I'm putting that in the win column for Monroe County right now. I think, I mean, we can't be ridiculous. We have to still be responsible. And I think, you know, kind of some of the stuff Brenda was talking about for family gatherings and how we serve meals, some of that kind of stuff is going to apply to Halloween. We don't want kids reaching into the basket and digging around and trying to find the piece of candy. That stuff needs to be handed out. It would be great for the homeowners to be sitting outside their house waiting for the trick-or-treaters to arrive so the doorbells aren't being touched. All of that kind of simple mitigation things should definitely be happening, but it's outdoor by definition anyways. It's very easy to incorporate masks. Now, a caveat there, remember the plastic mask or the mask that might come with the costume does not count as a cloth face covering. Mm-hmm. So you still need to have the regular cloth face covering for the kids. And it's something that I think we definitely are going to be able to do because our rates are so low right now. There's other communities in the country that are definitely not able to have Halloween, but we can definitely do this. If kids are choosing or the family is choosing to have a gathering of maybe classmates or kids that are already kind of in that same bubble, again, those things can be done in relatively safe ways with doing the stuff we've talked about, you know, opening windows, having the activities all be outside. Bobbing for apples is never a safe or good thing, so let's just get rid of that concept.
Like for forever?
Oh my gosh, that's always been a germy, disgusting thing that should never been allowed, so don't worry about that. There's plenty of other cool things that can definitely happen for Halloween. So I think Halloween is going to be pretty darn close to normal for kids in Monroe County.
Just to be clear, Dr. Murray, has anybody actually ever really bobbed for apples? Like at a real? Have you ever seen that, or is that mostly just on like cartoons?
I have seen it as a young child. I remember going to an event, and I remember being little and thinking that is gross. And that, yeah, so I've seen it, but I've never participated.
Whose mouth is even big enough to get the apple? What are we doing here? Okay, so we're not doing that anymore ever anyway. No. Okay, Dr. Ticini, how do you see Halloween?
I agree with a lot of things that Dr. Murray was saying. And, I've seen neighborhoods come together and decide as a community, again, like, let's do what's safest for our community and have you know, spread out times and kind of a one-way down the street trick-or-treating plan. So household units stay separate from each other, and, you know, candy is left out in individual packages. So again, there's no reaching and no kind of repetitive kids going into bowl after bowl. And another neat idea I saw was, you know, and again, this is what you're comfortable with for your household and your family, are to have within your own house set up a Halloween scavenger hunt for candy or treats, you know, like many families do for Easter egg hunts, something like that, or set that up with another family that your family has been interacting with, again, keeping that circle small and consistent throughout the holiday season. So finding new activities to do that still allow for some fun and celebration.
All right. We're talking about how to handle the holidays during the pandemic, knowing that life has to move on here, but we have to be as smart as we possibly can, and we make decisions with a lot of different things in mind here. Kristen in Irondequoit wants to weigh in on that. Go ahead, Kristen.
Hi. I've bobbed for apples. As a child of the 60s, we did it. So I'm very glad you're talking about this, because like you said, life has to go on. And my specific question and concern is about the elderly in our community and our families that have been so isolated. I have my dad who lives home alone, and my mom is in a nursing home facility here in Rochester. With dad, we've been able, as you mentioned it, I think you call it the bubble or the pod. We've been able, you know, a few of us in the family who aren't out much, who are very careful, are able to see him. And that's been huge for him, been very helpful. And definitely at the holidays, we'll find a way where somebody can have holiday meals with him. My mom in the nursing home, that's been a tougher situation, holidays and the rest of the year. Here in New York, very stringent rules on family getting to see their loved ones. So I guess I'd like to hear what your panel thinks about that, you know, the effects of the isolation on these folks in the nursing homes, and the fact that our county's doing so great right now. I'd love to see family be able to get in a little easier. And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen to you guys on the radio.
Yeah, Kristen, thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. That is a special challenge for the holidays when we talk about nursing homes. Dr. Tassini, if you want to start, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a really, really difficult year for people and their families and loved ones who are in nursing homes. And I hope, and this is a message to everyone, I guess, that we continue to do as much as we can as a community to protect these most vulnerable members of our community, and those would be people in nursing homes. If we do everything that we can do to keep our rates low, both in the county and as well as in the state, then I do think that we can work together and find in creative ways for nursing home residents to be able to spend some more time with their family. Because I do think we need to acknowledge the psychological effects and really difficult pressure this has placed on families.
Dr. Murray, go ahead.
Yeah, it's so hard because that's a tinderbox, really, right? You know, so if you as a family, maybe your 95-year-old relative is saying, it's okay, I'm going to relish this family time and take the risk of getting sick. That might be acceptable for your family and your decision within your whole family unit. But the problem is if that germ gets into the nursing home and then other people get sick, which can happen, unfortunately, so easily. And so it is. I mean, I agree with Brenda. If we keep keeping our rates down, then hopefully soon we'll see some change in the regulations and the rules as far as being able to get people back in to see their loved ones. But it's I think one of probably the hardest collateral things we've had to face in this pandemic is just it's so easy for the fire to start so rampantly in a nursing home type facility or a other long term healthcare facility. And so that's why I think everybody's just been so incredibly cautious, but it does not definitely make it any easier for the families. I think the families all understand rationally why it is like this, but in your heart and in your spirit, it's still really hard.
Melanie writes to say, we are planning on having 11 people indoors if not able to go outdoors. Our backup plan is to have table settings in separate rooms for each family. We are very good about wearing masks whenever indoors. My parents live for family gatherings, and it would destroy them not to be together. I am nervous about it, but I am still hoping we can brave the weather outdoors. That's from Melanie. Melanie, I hope so. She's read that's about Thanksgiving. I would probably guess that, you know, if you can do the same kind of thing for Christmas and be outdoors as much as you can, that's great. Melanie, my own family down in Chautauqua, who I saw briefly in an outdoor setting on a day trip this summer, they use what they call MIM, masks in motion. Even if they're hanging out on the deck outside and sitting 10 feet away from each other, everybody's got their mask ready to go. And if they get up to go grab a drink or move around, MIM, masks in motion. Masks always on indoors and masks in motion outdoors. Melanie, is how my family said it, but good luck to you. And I certainly hope for the best weather possible. Here's hoping we get the warmest Thanksgiving in history there. Melissa says, how are we able to go to a restaurant and sit and eat and walk and talk in a restaurant with a mask? Why can't we just do that at Thanksgiving? So let's just hit that one more time, Dr. Ticini. I think that's some of what The Atlantic and Olga Kazan was writing about. There seems to be some cognitive dissonance when we tell people bars are open, restaurants are open, be careful and maybe scale back Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? Like, that's hard for people. They say, well, restaurants are open. That's what Melissa writes. So I'm curious to know what you say to people who see the restaurants open and they find that dissonance and they're struggling with what to do because of it.
Yeah, I would say that eating, drinking, spending time indoors in bars and restaurants with people that aren't already part of your circle or your household is also a moderate to high risk situation, depending on how everyone is conducting themselves in that situation. So I would put these larger group gatherings for holidays in that same category, that they can be done well and done in a less risky way, or they can be done where they introduce a lot of risk to people. So bars and restaurants, individual groups should be maintained at least 6 feet of distance from each other. They should wear masks whenever up from the table. I love that, masks in motion. So that's that same rule does apply. It's regulated for bars and restaurants to stay open in New York State. So I think taking those same general principles and thinking about putting it in a home setting is what we're trying to do here. And I think in a home and with family who's used to spending time together, and in many families, being physically close together, that's where there is some difference. It's, I think, much harder to maintain those boundaries in your own home with your own family than it is, say, if you were to eat out at a restaurant and stay with your table, which is 6 feet away from all the other tables.
And maybe if you could both take about 45 seconds to end the hour by answering the other point that Melissa made. Melissa said, yes, lots are getting COVID, but hardly anyone comparatively is dying. I'm going to get together with whoever I want. That's from Melissa. Dr. Murray, go ahead.
Yes, I think that's great that we haven't had as many deaths recently. There was certainly a lot of deaths, and there's been over 200,000 deaths in the United States that we wouldn't have likely seen otherwise if it hadn't been for coronavirus. But I will say the morbidity that people have faced from this illness is also quite great. And, especially the kids who've gotten sick from it, you know, they may not be dying, but some are still getting hospitalized and people are being sick for a long period of time. And we're hearing more and more stories of people months into their illness still being very symptomatic and not being able to get back to their normal life and their normal activities. And so we don't fully understand the capabilities of this illness yet. We have a really good handle on it, but it's still every chance it gets, it seems to throw us a curveball. And so obviously preventing deaths is critically important, but there's a lot of other suffering going on there. And that's not just death. And now, granted, some of that suffering is certainly financial, and I certainly appreciate that and understand that too. And that's why there needs to be a little bit of a balance of, you know, risk mitigation and risk balancing as we reenter the world. But death is not the only outcome we need to be afraid of.
30 seconds, Dr. Tessini.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say that any death or serious illness that is avoidable should be, we should all make an attempt to avoid. You know, one extra death is that's someone's loved one. And that could be your loved one who died or spent months in the hospital or has chronic illness from the infection. So I think we all need to work together to protect the most vulnerable members of our society and our own families through the holiday season.
And Dr. Murray, since I know you're on Twitter, I'm going to tag you. I've got a separate question from a listener about what happens when people get colds. Well, I can't remember the last holidays where my dad didn't have a cold. And now the problem is every time someone sneezes in your family at the holidays, everyone's going to be looking at them aside. But it's going to be hard. This is going to be very hard. Let's try to be as safe and smart as we can. I'll tag you on Twitter. You can jump in and answer Kelly there. But I want to thank our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Murray. Thanks for the time. Happy holidays. I know I'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Get your flu shot.
Yeah, I have gotten mine. Dr. Tessini, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great information. Good luck to... And listeners, we're all in this together on the holidays. Let's do our best here and support each other. Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you Monday.